Gillingham are on the Wembley way.
Hello and welcome to the Gills Fancast. There were last minute limbs at Priestfield on Saturday afternoon as Gills got the better of Sunderland once again to move within a point of the top half of League One. This podcast will be slightly different to any other we've done before because I'm flying solo for the first time. This is mainly because of work commitments of others making it harder to get us together to record, but also because I am aiming to get podcasts released on a slightly more regular basis so that essentially we aren't having to cover multiple games at one time or discuss games that might have taken place 2 or 3 weeks ago and then they're out of everyone's mind then and things have moved on. Perhaps that makes it more of a monologue than a podcast, me doing it by myself, but either way, you have the pleasure of enjoying just me and my notes for the next half an hour or so. In this episode, I'll be reflecting on the Sunderland victory at the weekend and all the talking points that came with it before discussing our recent upturn in good form. Last week's FA Cup draw, which paired us up with West Ham United, and then a little look ahead to the upcoming busy festive period. So, starting with the weekend just gone. A 1-0 victory against the Mackems for the second time in just 17 days. And much like the last one in the FA Cup replay, I thought it was a victory that we very much deserved. First half particularly, we were the dominant side throughout. Created numerous good openings. I can, just off the top of my head, I can recall Brendan Hanlon firing one, I think it was just over or just wide. It was a bit of a similar position to the goal he scored against Sunderland, but on this occasion he failed to hit the target. And obviously we had the big talking point from the first half after that, which was again from Brendan Hanlon. His header, which, did it go over the line? Did it not go over the line? Still don't really know. I've personally seen nothing conclusive for me to be able to say 100% one way or the other, but I know a lot of people have said that they've seen things that indicate it definitely should have been given as a goal. And I did see on social media that someone had posted a picture of their view in the ground, and it was right on the goal line up towards that goal by the Brian Moore stand, and they said that they had the best view in the house of it, and without a doubt the goal should have been awarded. But We don't have the technology in League One. We're not going to have the technology in League One. So it's one of them that we just have to put up with. But it does seem like over the last couple of years, we have had 3 or 4 seemingly go against us. I remember there was one at Plymouth. I think it was Tom Eaves had one that went over the line and wasn't given. I remember in a Checkatrade Trophy game, Josh Parker at Priestfield had a strike that clearly went over the line and wasn't given. And then we had the infamous one away at Southend last season where it appeared we had scored and the referee waved play on and we ended up conceding on the break from it. So yeah, it seems like we don't have much luck in that regard. But yeah, we also in the first half had Mika Mandron hitting the bar from, well, it, obviously we don't sit up that end, but it couldn't have been any more than 2 or 3 yards from the goal. And I think it was Brendan Hanlon involved, as he was for much of our good play at the weekend. And he's fired this ball across the box and Mandron's done really, really well to beat the defender and get there. And you just assume that any touch and the ball's going to go in the back of the net. And it didn't. It came back off the frame of the goal and it was another chance wasted. And at half time, we should have been ahead. And could possibly have even had the game sewn up. So at that point, for me anyway, there were little doubts starting to creep into my mind again if whether it would be another one of those days where we'd control proceedings for the large part, but not find that all-important goal. And for much of the second half, it looked as though that goal was going to evade us. And at one point, we all thought that we'd suffered the cruelest of hammer blows as Sunderland did have the ball in the net. I think it was probably about 15 minutes to play. It happened, and yeah, the ball hit the back of the net and their players wheeled off celebrating. But straight away, I noticed that Jack Bonham was flying out the goal, sprinting over to the referee, protesting about something, which obviously from the Rainham end at the time, we don't really know what that was for. But then, yeah, the referee went over to his linesman and they had a brief conversation and yeah, the referee decided to chalk the goal off, which was obviously a relief for us, but also quite a satisfying moment because in that away end, one Sunderland fan decided to let off a smoke bomb. So while that was going off, they had the unfortunate event of their goal being chalked off. So whoever that was, I'm sure they wasted a fiver or whatever it cost for that smoke bomb. But looking back on replays and pictures now, there's no doubt at all that the referee and the linesman between them come to the right decision, because Bonham was clearly impeded by Luke O'Neill, and I think he was offside as well. So not only was he offside, but he also had hold of Jack Bonham's arm. So you could have given offside or you could have given a foul on Bonham. Either way, the decision was right. And I thought it was interesting that the first picture I see of it was on Sunderland Chronicle website, and it was in an interview with Parkinson where most of it was spent about him moaning about the decision, saying that the referees had guessed. And the photo that accompanied the article was of O'Neill clearly holding onto Bonham's arm. So it was as if that, I know Phil Parkinson certainly isn't flavour of the month up there at the moment, and I don't know if that the whole arrangement of photo with that article was if it's trying to make Parkinson look a little bit silly. Certainly from what I've seen, he hasn't gone down well up there, and I'm not surprised, because a club like Sunderland in League One shouldn't be losing, I think it's 7 away games in a row and things like that, and they would say that they shouldn't be losing to Gillingham twice in 3 weeks, but there'll be no complaints about us. But yeah, the good thing from my point of view is that narrow escape, it didn't set us back. We didn't lose heart and we didn't just sit on what we had thinking, all right, we've got away with that one, we'll just take the point now. We kept probing away, kept prodding away, kept winning set pieces, corners, free kicks in and around the edge of the box, and finally the winner came in the 89th minute. And it was a strange one, to be honest, because the corner come in and it just seemed to bounce around for an age, and then out of nowhere, Conor Ogilvie's left boot flew towards the ball, and the next thing you see the ball arrowing into the top corner, and that was that, and the game was won. And yeah, there was incredible scenes around Priestfield when the ball hit the back of the net. You know, there was a few fans on the pitch, I think, with plenty more running down the front of the Rainham end to try and celebrate with the players. I somehow ended up falling down a row of seats, which is something incredibly unusual for me to happen. But no, in all seriousness, you just can't beat that feeling of a last-minute winner. As well as it's something that I can't remember us having the pleasure of celebrating for a little while, to be honest. I can't, off the top of my head, recall the last game that we won late on. So, yeah, it was a fantastic moment. And like I said at the start, one that I think we very much deserved. From start to finish, I thought we were the better team. Admittedly, the stats will suggest that we only had one shot on target, which was the goal. But no, we first off, especially, we created so many openings. And like I say, it was just at times it was a case of, is the goal going to come? And in second half, I don't think we was quite as threatening. But when you're defending the way we are at the moment, we only need one goal to win a game. And that's how it proved. And obviously the winner did come from Conor Ogilvie. And to just touch on him slightly, because he found his way into the team last season playing as a left-sided centre-back rather than at left-back. And I think that was because that we'd seen him play left-back for quite a while prior to that. And he was, well, unconvincing, probably the word I would use to sum it up. And when Steve Evans took over, he said at the Q&A he did with supporters, I think the week after he took over, that you won't see me playing Conor Ogilvie at left back. And obviously that hasn't turned out to be quite true, because for the last two or three games, Conor Ogilvie has been playing in that position. But to credit him, he looks a different player out there now. I don't know whether it's because that spending a period as a central defender has maybe helped him out a little bit, but he looks so much more assured there now. He's strong defensively, and he can drive forward with the ball really well. And there was one in the first half, I think, where Bonham rammed the ball out to him, and he travelled 50, 60 yards with the ball and set us off on an attack. And it's so much better from him than what we saw even only a year ago when he was playing at left back. And that's obviously credit to him, and also I assume credit to the management staff, because as we've seen with the whole defence, there's been a massive improvement. And that doesn't happen without the right kind of leadership and coaching qualities in there on the training ground. But yeah, it was another 3 points on the board and another win, which we're able to enjoy on a quite regular basis at the moment, which of course we won't complain about. Yesterday's result made it 5 consecutive home wins with 5 clean sheets, which is, well, it's unheard of. It's the only time we've done it in this decade, which is quite incredible, really. And I've not looked it up, so I could be completely wrong, but I can't imagine there'll be many, if any, teams across the country at the moment with a better run of clean sheets at home. 5 games without conceding a goal is a mammoth effort. It's phenomenal, especially when you look at the start of the season. These same players were leaking goals a little bit more than we'd have hoped, and the transformation in the last 3 weeks it's been absolutely phenomenal. But obviously it's not just the clean sheets that help you to win a game. You also have to score if you want to win. In all competitions we won 5 of the last 6, conceding just 1 goal in that period, and then in the last 10 games we've lost just 2. So there's no shadow of a doubt that we're going in the right direction. And I can recall an interview, I think with Paul Rayner recently, probably 2 or 3 weeks ago, and he said that he feels like it's now a Steve Evans and Paul Rayner team. And not just our performances, but the results are now starting to reflect that as well. And I feel like they now appear to know what their strongest team is, barring injuries, of course, as we've seen from the Wimbledon game, where Stuart O'Keefe, he is in our strongest team, but unfortunately, obviously he suffered his injury, so then it has to change in that regard. But I think we now turn up on a Saturday and we know what probably 10 of the 11 are going to be. And that's a good thing, in my opinion, because I think the team will benefit from having that consistency in selection. The more they play with each other, the better they'll be together, ultimately. And I think we are starting to reap the rewards of that now. And it was always going to take a bit of time. You know, in the summer, there was so much overhaul of the playing squad. I don't know how many players we had leave, but it was probably 15 in and 10 or 11. No, 15 out, I think it was, and 10 or 11 in. And that's a lot of change. And to expect that to click instantly was naive on the part of some people. And, you know, I saw some ridiculous comments where we hadn't even got out of August and people were calling for Evans' head and saying he's not good enough because we hadn't won a game. And just the knee-jerk stuff. And I know there are people that I think, obviously, where they didn't want Evans in, were sort of quite happy to revel in the fact that we weren't winning games at first. But unfortunately now there's not a lot that they can complain at, because we are playing well and we are picking up the results to go with it ultimately. And the only downside of where we are at the moment is that, like I said, we don't score the goals to reflect our performances, because we're looking like a real good unit now. As I say, the stats speak for themselves. Defensively, we're rock solid at the moment. And our midfield is really starting to come to the party as well. You know, we're full of energy, we're full of tenacity, as well as having some very good footballers in there. And in terms of them creating chances, we do get into plenty of good areas. But it's just that final bit that still lets us down a little bit sometimes. And in recent weeks, the combination of Brandon Hannon and Mika Mandrin has worked well. They're both performing well, but the issue is that neither of them are prolific scorers at this moment in time. Mandrin, I don't think ever will be. I don't think he's that type of player. But Brandon Hanlon, there's definitely the signs that I think in 2 years' time, where he's matured and developed even further, I think there is a possibility that he could be a 15, 20 goal a season striker. But the problem is we need goals now. And at this moment in time, I don't think he's at that stage. That's not me criticising him or me saying he shouldn't be in the team, because I still think he should be in the team. And if a striker was to appear, I'd be looking at them to partner Hanlon rather than replace him. And I think that ultimately, if we could bring in a striker in January who will sort of score us 10 goals post-Christmas, and the prospect of bringing a forward in, hopefully, shouldn't be an impossible one now, given the funds that we'd have raised from the FA Cup run that I'll come on to in a minute. If we can get a forward in, then I honestly don't think we could rule out a late charge towards top six towards the end of the season. I think it was just last week that Evan said that if we're within 6 points of the playoffs at Christmas time, he believes that we will be there or thereabouts come May. And obviously, as the festive period approaches, we're 7 points off the playoffs, I think. So if we can keep our good form going for a couple of weeks longer, we will be in that sort of that bracket that Evans was aiming to be in around Christmas time. And then we can hopefully reinforce the squad a little bit in January. We don't need masses of surgery, because of course we've still got to bear in mind that we've got Matty Willock, who isn't quite ready to start games, but is fit again now. So we should be seeing him enter the fray fairly soon. And, you know, he's played, what, one half of competitive football for us this season. So that will be like a new signing for us straight away. And you don't want to bring too many players in January and rock the apple cart a little bit. So I think one striker, a striker that will be able to score goals, that has a little bit of pedigree, is what we're looking for. But other than that, I don't think there is any real need to go rushing out to try and strengthen in any other areas, to be honest. You know, defensively, we're looking good. You could argue that if Max or Jack Tucker gets injured, will he want to move Ogilvie back inside now, or will we stick with him at left back? But I think we're fine. Because we've also, of course, got Alfie Jones, who can slot back in at centre-back naturally. And then we have got more than enough central midfield players to fill that void if needed. So the squad is shaping up really, really nicely at the moment. And just we're one piece of the jigsaw missing, I think, from really having a go at it in the second half of the season. If January comes and goes and we don't find that goal scorer, I think sort of between 10th and 12th will be about our ceiling, I think. But if we can get that goal scorer in, then I think the playoffs will be a possibility for sure. But coming off league matters, so to speak, for a little bit. I'll move on to the FA Cup, because it's another success story for the club at the moment. As last Monday, wasn't it, that we sat and watched the FA Cup draw and was given a home tie against West Ham. And it's a tie that I think we thoroughly deserved. You know, we've overcome two tricky opponents to reach the third round this year. Whereas you look at last year and it took us extra time in a replay to come through against National League Hartlepool. And then we went to National League South Slough in the second half and in the second round, sorry, and we got away with a 1-0 win in a game where we didn't perform well at all. But this year we've been convincing throughout the opening two rounds. You know, we arguably could have beat Sunderland the first time at the Stadium of Light, but then they come back to our place for the replay and we were thoroughly deserving winners. And then obviously we played Doncaster at home in the second round and yeah, was 2-0 up in 20 minutes against them and had that game wrapped up early doors and again was thoroughly deserving winners in that one. And it's nice to see us make the third round for 2 years running because I could be wrong, but I'd expect this is probably the first time we've reached round three in back-to-back years since we dropped out of the Championship. Because this competition hasn't been overly kind for us in the last 10, 15 years, has it? We've had quite a few first-round knockouts and defeats to non-league teams and stuff, so it's good that we seem to have got ourselves together in the FA Cup a little bit because it can bring rewards for the football club like we've been given last week. You know, West Ham are what they are. Of course, it's not in that top tier opponents that we could have drawn like a Liverpool or a Man City or a Chelsea or a Tottenham or someone like that. But it's a local tie which brings appeal and I'm fairly sure that it will pretty much pack Priestfield, won't it? Because they'll obviously fill the Brian Moore stand. And I'd like to think that, especially given our good form now, that the people of Medway, the people of Kent will come and support the team in hope of seeing an FA Cup shot like we pulled off last year when, of course, we beat Cardiff. And much like the Cardiff tie last year, with the way West Ham are at the moment, I genuinely think it's a tie that we have a half a chance of winning. And, you know, West Ham's recent record in cup competitions isn't good. If you think back to last year's FA Cup, I remember they played AFC Wimbledon in the third round live on TV and they were beaten 4-2. And then this season in the League Cup, they played Oxford away and they were hammered 3-0. So their recent record against teams from our division is appalling, to be honest, and hopefully that's something that come January the 6th we'll be able to exploit, and it'll be even more enjoyable if we can do that, given the fact that the game has of course been selected for BT coverage on Sunday the 6th, kicking off at 6:16 p.m. And when the draw was done, I had a look through the fixtures, and once I sort of seen that there would be five or six games shown live throughout the weekend, I always thought ours would be one of the ones shown because, you know, yes, Man City v Port Vale, for example, is a great tie for Port Vale, but realistically, it's not going to be a shock. And with Man City being at home, it only reduces the chances of that, whereas with West Ham being a Premier League team that are a bit iffy in form at the moment, and with us being the home team, they probably looked at it and thought there's much more chance of an upset, and that's why they've selected it. And of course, that should bring in an extra few pennies for the club, which may or may not help with Evan's hopes to bring in that bit more quality in January. Obviously, that depends entirely on what the chairman decides to do with the money. I'd like to think he will back Evans with a little bit because I'd like to think that the chairman is looking at us at the moment and the results and the performances and can see that there's something there. There is something there, and just one player and the one right type of player, and we really could give it a go in the second half of the season. So hopefully, I mean, I don't know exactly how much we've made so far or how much we will make from the West Ham game, but I assume we're looking at probably in total about £250,000 or something, which, yeah, it's not going to get us necessarily a permanent signing that's going to score 15 goals. But I would like to think that if we looked at a loan player from perhaps the Premier League or the Championship, that we might be able to fund their wages with that for the second half of the season. And they could score goals, which could end up being crucial in us trying to push into that top 10, top 6 bracket. But obviously, before the FA Cup comes round, we have a number of league games to navigate. We're heading towards that really busy period of the season now as we head into a run of 4 games in just 16 days, which starts on Saturday. In those 4 games, we have away trips to Fleetwood Town and Ipswich, as well as home clashes with Rochdale and MK Dons. The 2 away games are going to be incredibly tough for us, without any shadow of a doubt. But the home forms, I think, are perfect fixtures for us, to be honest, to continue our good form at Priestfield. But touching on the away games, first up is Fleetwood this coming Saturday. And whilst I think they're 9th in the table at the moment, so they're not a million miles away from us, but I was having a look this morning, and their home form is incredibly impressive. You know, if you think our home form is good at the moment, you should have a look at theirs. They've only lost 1 of the last 12, and it's not as if they draw a lot of home games either. Most of those 12 games have been victories. So they're clearly incredibly difficult to beat at Highbury. And, you know, we've also not quite cracked it away from home yet. I think we've only lost 3 away games in the league, sorry. But you'd say we've probably drawn too many. Drawn games that we probably should have won. You probably think of Shrewsbury away. We probably should have won that one. And obviously the Tranmere away game, we had a 2-goal lead and let it slip. It's important that we do try and back up the home form with a few more wins on the road. And there'd be no better place to start than this weekend at Fleetwood. You know, I think we've got a fairly good record up there. I think we've won a couple of times in the last 2 or 3 years. And if we can do that, then we'll be heading into the top half of the table and really starting to look ahead of us and see where it can take us. But I was interested to see what people thought about the remainder of 2019, because prior to the Sunderland game, I put a tweet out on Twitter and asked for people's predictions and the points we'll take from the last 5 games of 2019. And the responses were interesting. I think I had a range of 5 points to as much as 13. I think someone said that the only points we'd drop is we'd draw to Ipswich. So that's the positivity and optimism that some have got at the moment from our current form. But I think the majority of predictions were around that 9-10 point mark, which is a prediction I'd probably go along with, especially given that, like I said, the 2 home games are ones that we should really be targeting victories from. And then, of course, we already have the 3 points from the first of that run of games against Sunderland at the weekend just gone. But of course, the festive period is always an intriguing one. But it's also it's an exciting time of year for fans, coaches and players alike. And if we can head into 2020 sitting in the top half of League One, I personally think we could class that as a successful first half of the season. And it would give us some really strong foundations to try and build on and kick on from January to May, and see where this first season under Steve Evans takes us. But on that note, that's all for this podcast. As always, thanks for listening, and especially for this episode, I'd really appreciate some feedback on how you found the format of me going solo, and if the general consensus has worked, then I'll happily do more of it if it means that we're not having to wait 2-3 weeks to try and get a podcast out, because I don't think it's the most beneficial way of going about things. But before Christmas, we'll be recording a podcast all about the decade, which is now heading towards an end. So if you head over to our Twitter and let us know your favourite game, goal, player and manager, we'll round it all up and reflect on the good, the bad and the indifferent from 2010 through to 2019. So yeah, once again, thanks a lot for listening. And lastly, up the Jills.